We are broadcasting from the Earth Station Roswell Visitor Center. Sergeant Clifford Stone, the E, Clifford E. Stone. What's the E stand for?
Earl.
Okay, Earl. Well, you said you knew where to look sometimes. In other words, your experience, and we're talking about documentation.
Yes, sir.
And documents, period. I got from that, and maybe I'm putting your words in your mouth or something, but I got from that, if you knew where they were and you asked properly or showed up and said, let me see it, usually they'd let you do it.
They would usually let me do it. As a matter of fact, in Dinosaur, I got to see the documents before they were declassified. And I'm sitting back looking at them and seeing that they're still stamped with their classification. And I'm saying, well, where's the stamp that says that these have been declassified under FOIA?
And it's not there yet.
And, it's not there. It's not been declassified yet. I said, so if somebody sees me with these, I just simply tell them to call you. And no, you're going to go to jail because they're not declassified. And I said, okay, what do I need to do to get them declassified? Well, eventually they were declassified, put up on site. Some of the stuff I was trying to get from Wright-Patterson, they made it very difficult because my computer would keep going down. And even though it had the program in there to open the files, it wouldn't open them. And a friend of mine in California, he went ahead and emailed them to me. So I got them, but I still had to crack the nut on how we go ahead and get these files from there. Well, it's supposed to be QuickTime files. I got QuickTime. Everybody, I think, has got QuickTime. I even went ahead and bought the Pro 7, but it would not open those files. So I thought, okay, I know what to do. So I went ahead, got back on there, clicked on it to save to my desktop, saved it to my desktop. It went through one of the Microsoft programs, appeared on my desktop. Then I just clicked it, create a PDF file, so I created the file. And that was some very interesting reading. But it also tied into the other stuff I saw, so I went through DTAC and got the rest of the information that they'd let me have. And I'm still pushing to try to get some more information. Also, NASA had some information on it, but I also found out I started off with Mach 27. And there's indications that these craft actually attained that speed.
Now, that's pretty fast.
Yes, sir. Also, if you'll note when you see the pictures, there is no heat shield on these craft. And they were going out in space. They were carried into space. They were what they called a boost glider type craft. They would actually circumvent the globe three times, then start reentry in the Earth's atmosphere, which they could go around several more times, taking fantastic pictures. Skipping the Earth's atmosphere, which means in 55-56 time frame, had we funded the program to do it, we would have had the first man in space. And it wouldn't just be a little ball sending back a beeping noise. But we chose not to do that. It wasn't until we got concerned with Sputnik that we decided, you know, we better get out there too. We were working on it, but it was still something that was considered, we can put it on the back burner. It didn't get its boost till after the Russians put Sputnik up.
Now, when we talk about Wright-Patterson, anything going on there now?
At Wright-Patterson?
Yeah.
I think so, yes, sir.
You do?
I definitely believe.
I mean, there's all kinds of stories about what's happened in the past, and probably most of it's true, I think.
Oh, yes, sir.
And so, but they're a big story these days as well. We moved all that stuff out of there in the 80s. They probably didn't.
Let me give you an example. When UFOs first started, when we first started to investigate UFOs, and the public knew we were doing it, but didn't know what, because it was supposed to be secret. It was above secret. Army CIC was doing it. Once again, CIC's Counterintelligence Corps.
Yeah, right.
They gathered files. They kept the most.
I had a discussion with a guy of Air Force OIC, and I said, well, I think the Army really was doing a lot more than everybody thinks, and he agreed with me. I think the Army was kind of hidden here, but
oh yes, sir,
they were right in the middle of it.
Well,
probably leading.
Well, we had the file on what happened here at Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what a lot of people don't know, do you know the Roswell file actually showed up in the Blue Book files and was there for a longest period of time?
Oh, really?
But people don't go back and read that stuff, the files. As a matter of fact, some of the files even got lost, even got destroyed, because after the Project Sign report came out, we were not going to investigate UFOs anymore. Something happened here in New Mexico that actually caused Grudge to come into existence.
What was that?
The Green Fireball phenomenon.
Okay. Now, I remember the Green Fireball story. They were,
yes, sir.
They still hear about it.
So. Oh, yes, sir. And they are still
What's
just as mysterious. Project Twinkle was inconclusive.
Okay.
La Paz went to his death stating these were manufactured devices.
By us, probably.
Well.
Or somebody.
The technology we didn't have at that time.
Okay.
But now remember, Project Sign said, about page 7 and 8, I think it is, on Project Sign, it stated, we look very closely at the possibility of these things being interplanetary spacecraft. We have a report done by Dr. Lipp of the RAM Corporation that says the least probability of the explanation of unidentified flying objects is interplanetary spacecraft. We will not in the future entertain or accept them as interplanetary spacecraft. You will not go that route. From that time on, they didn't. From that time on, if you worked in the aerial phenomena branch there at Wright-Patterson, it was a dead-end street. You were on your way out of the service. I don't know anybody that made a promotion or went further into their careers after they became head of Blue Book, Grudge, Sign, forget it, because during the period of Sign, the whole reason for doing that and making it clear in that report that you won't even consider interplanetary as an explanation was the, everyone calls it the top secret estimate of the situation. It was actually what we call a situation estimate. I've only seen one that's ever been released. But the situation UFOs, the estimate, they were interplanetary. Well, the Air Force went ahead and devised a system called bait and switch. You tell me what you saw. I will go ahead and put the other pieces in there, because what you're telling me what you saw may have been a structured craft, circular, and you were 15 feet away from it. Now, I'm going to put the pieces in there where you were suffering from war hysteria, you saw a helicopter land maybe 30 feet away from you, and your imagination took over. Now, why am I doing that? Not because I don't believe you, but I'm under orders to reduce the number of unknowns. During the time of Project Sign, 35% of the UFOs reported were unknown. They were reported by reliable, trained observers. By that being the case, it was very difficult to look these people in the eye and say, well, you know, that can't be. You're telling me a fantastic story. Well, that's how Hynek got it. Fantastic, that he was hearing fantastic stories being told, or how was it? Fantastic stories being told by highly credible people. It couldn't be ignored. He even had a frustration with the Air Force. In Bismarck, what is it, South Dakota?
Mm-hmm.
Bismarck, South Dakota, August 6, 1953. UFOs are being picked up by the ground observers, being picked up on radar, and the decision is made, send fighters up. Find out what these things are. Fighters went up. The UFOs took evasive action to avoid the fighters. The fighters saw them, would try to close in on them. They'd let them get close, then they'd take off. Even with the fighters hitting the afterburners, the fighters couldn't get close to them. 200 miles away, they started to see the same thing, only the evasive action wasn't being taken, probably because no fighters were sent up that time. I mean, if you can't do it, you can't do it. Mm-hmm. Why burn the fuel?
Mm-hmm.
So they went ahead and hit up on this. Hynek was scared to death in his report that he wrote for him. He says, you know, we give credence to this air of mystery in the in our investigation of UFOs. Take, for example, the Bismarck, South Dakota case, in which for 6 hours we had objects being seen, fighters going up to try to intercept them, being picked up on radar. And we cannot explain it. When some UFO researcher gets a hold of that, then we're going to be hard-pressed to explain what happened there. So he made it clear we need to go back and check these cases that are a year, 2 years, 3 years old and try to explain them. Well, we did. And it wasn't important that the explanation be right. Just get it off the books as as an unknown. What you wanted to do was reduce your number of unknowns. So he couldn't understand why no one took a picture, why they didn't send somebody out there to investigate, trained scientists who would have known what they were looking at. And, you know, this didn't make any sense to him. And also, he alluded to, you know, this could give the enemy the upper hand. In other words, the enemy could start bombing us, and all you have to do is go ahead, have some fifth columnists say, hey, I saw a UFO last night, get the adrenaline rushing, having other people start misidentifying stars, things of this sort, cause hysteria, bomb. Well, the bombing and all this would be taking place. You would not even anticipate that it's the Soviets or say, we're not doing that. But what happens? Everybody thinks ET's attacking. So after 2 or 3 days of this, well, you have a problem. And, you know, the morale is shot. No one has confidence in their military. And you've lost the war before it even begun. He actually put that in his assessment.
It was in there.
Now, what do you do about that case, which it took evasive action, picked up on radar, was being seen by many people? Well, you go ahead and you say that there was malfunction in the radars, and that what people were seeing were temperature inversions. Now, I'm willing to accept that the day that somebody comes in and scientifically shows me that temperature inversions will take evasive action from fighter aircraft.
Good point. Sergeant Stone, we'll be right back and wrap this up. We're almost out of time. I want to ask you about this other CD that you have out. Don't go away.
I'm Jim Mars, author of Alien Agenda, the world's top-selling nonfiction book on UFOs. I'm here today to tell you one of the most fascinating stories I've come across in my career as a journalist. The secret of Reggate is that so many people in one small American community now know that there is so much more to the universe than what we see and experience in our everyday world.
Save $5 this month when you purchase The Secret of Reggate DVD from ShopJerryPippin.com. This film won the prestigious People's Choice Awards at the 2004 UFO Conference. The Secret of Reggate will astound you. You will want to see it again and again. Save $5. Order it now, this month only, at ShopJerryPippin.com. Secret of Reggate, a Linda Cowan production. We're in Roswell, and we're talking to Clifford Stone, who became a resident of Roswell through government obfuscation, I guess. They wouldn't let you move. Welcome back. Let's talk about this other CD you have.
Well, I have a...
You have another one. It's just released.
I have four.
Yeah, all together.
Yes, sir. The other one...
new one first.
Yes, sir. That one is the... New Mexico and UFOs, the early years, 1947 to 1952. You find out a whole lot about the green fireball phenomena. Also, you find out that the only state in the Union during the tenure of Project Blue Book that had its own Blue Book file was New Mexico.
Really?
Yes, sir.
A state operation.
Well, a file within the Blue Book files just marked New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was telling you earlier, I actually believe that the death throbs would have been felt with the conclusions of Project Sign in February of 1949, in which the Air Force would have gladly have gotten out of the UFO business. And if you reported UFOs, we're sorry, if you feel threatened, notify your local law enforcement agency. We don't investigate UFOs anymore. Had it not been for Dr. Lincoln LaPaz seeing his green fireball and being an expert in the field, knew that that was something that was manufactured and exhibiting technology that was above and beyond anything that we had. Being concerned that it could be some type of espionage device directed against the security of the United States, he brought it to the attention of the military. The military was having their own problems with it, too.
All through this discussion we've had with you, it seems to me that the overriding concern was the security of the United States and the Cold War.
Yes, sir.
If all of these things, the UFO sightings and all this had happened in a different climate, we might have a different outcome as far as disclosure.
Actually, we don't know that. Now, the reason I state that, there was a workshop that NASA had in the year 2000. Everybody quotes the Brookings Institute as to what they had to say. Well, in the year 2000, the Astrophysiology Department of NASA had a workshop. The concern, one of the concerns that they had was to let people know we're not alone in the universe when we have that first contact. They also, because of the entering into the advanced propulsion systems now and recognizing the fact that we may someday be able to visit other solar systems outside of our own, they may be able to come here. And the big concern is what world reaction would be. They believe religion is resilient enough that it would survive. There would not be a problem there. But once again, there would be many questions that would be brought up about the scientific community. It would be day one of school all over for most of the scientific community.
So in other words, you're saying we generally we talk about the religious implications.
Yes, sir.
But you're saying the scientific implications were probably just as overriding because these were scientists and they were trying to cover their own...
Correct, sir. The other thing that's interesting about that report is that it makes it clear the clock is ticking. The day is approaching that we're going to have open contact. And the question is, how do you tell a world society? You and I might be able to accept extraterrestrial visitors, life out there in the cosmos, but there's a whole lot of people that aren't. They are concerned about the people who will take their lives, and there will be turmoil, particularly if that life shows up here, because most people fear the unknown, and they're going to perceive it as a threat. And I'd like to say
that's always been one of the... I didn't mean to interrupt, and I'll let you say what you're going to say, but that's always been one of the concerns I've had. If the ETs wanted to make a friendly visit, we'd probably misread it. We'd think they were attacking us or something.
Well, from the military viewpoint, we would definitely want to go ahead and acquire the technology. But, you know, most of us see them as cartoon characters. We don't stop to think. They have societies like us. They have loves, they have likes, they have dislikes. They even have disagreements, but they're explorers. They're not warriors. Can they defend themselves? Oh, they could reduce us to a burned-out cinder, but that's not what they're about. Someday we're going to be space travelers too, but the only way that's going to happen is for us to leave our warlike ways here on this planet and start exploring the cosmos with the enthusiasm and the zeal of a child. We want to get out there and find out things about our universe for the knowledge, not for the destruction and detriment of the human species.
In your research, in your military life, and after your military life, have you seen evidence of contact?
Oh, yes, sir.
Has it always been friendly?
There have been some instances in which we would go ahead and identify some of it as being hostile, but we were always the aggressors.
Right. That's when we tried to shoot them down and they would...
one story I'd like to tell you about, but I get too emotional when I do it. But the reason, see, when you're telling the story, you see it, and you see it. You're reliving it inside of you. You're reliving it.
Yeah, well, I'd like to hear it if you could do it. I don't want to put you through a lot, but
well, there was one case where, and I've told this one before, but we were entertaining one. He was supposed to be our guest. He was our prisoner. We don't keep them. They get them back. As soon as there's a crash, just like we do, there's an effort to try to recover them. But I was gifted or cursed with this situation that I was sensitive to things. So I was used what they call interfacing a lot. And it's pretty much like you and I talk. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I would try to talk because I wasn't used to conversing that way. But with the ETs, you would go ahead and you would feel what they were feeling.
And so not only did you hear a voice in your head, you felt their emotion.
Everything. They felt what you felt, and particularly when you got a companion. That was a person that pretty much follows you through life. And what that's all about, I don't know to this day, but I know it happens. Anyhow, we had this one room, and they had this entity in there. And I was supposed to go in and get what I could.
I know this is painful, I apologize.
But I went in, and it looked up at me, and exact words, "I am afraid." And I felt what it was feeling. And trying to get it out a little further, you know, think of you being billions of miles from home, not knowing if you're going to see your family again, your loved ones, or your own world. And we helped it get away.
You the people there.
Well,
not officially.
Me and another Spec 5.
Yeah, okay.
But it almost didn't happen, but
so you helped it escape.
Yes.
And what kind of ET was this?
This one was like an ash gray, and it was about 4.5-5 foot tall.
Had it been involved in a crash or something?
I didn't have a need to know that, but I believe that's what happened.
And probably had lost other companions.
And, well, he said that his people was coming to get him.
Okay.
But there was a problem. In order to get him where we were at, they would have to take life, and they wasn't going to do that. So we knew we had to get him outside. If we got him outside, no one would be hurt.
And so you took him out of the compound?
We took him more than just out of the compound. It had barbed wire around the compound. And we went ahead and cut the wire. Oryk didn't know what was going on. But he got to see it. There was other people that I served with that knew there was something strange about me, that I wasn't just the atypical 71 Lima. It happened to work in this office or that office.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a couple of places where I was supposed to be the NCO. Well, at one time, I was supposed to have been the NCOIC of Army Community Services at Fort Bliss. I was never the NCOIC of Army Community Services at Fort Bliss. I can produce the orders that says I was, but I was never that.
Far from that.
Oh, yes, sir.
And this being, did it thank you?
We had an understanding.
Okay.
If you have a family,
you could identify.
You could identify with what was going on there.
I think that's a good point to end the show. We'll talk to you again.